You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 25.
Yo, Rushik, guys, sick bastards, much mush.
That was Greg Harbin, and I'm Christopher Jones, and as always, we'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the results of our Netflix Thanksgiving poll, more developments surrounding the next movie, details about TNG Remastered from Mike Okuda, and the Anovos Command Division dress replica. And in the feature, we're joined by 5-Year Mission for live acoustic performances from Year 2, and to talk about the process of making the new album. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastically. Merry Christmas, Chris. Now that we've moved past Thanksgiving, it's now, you know, all Christmas all the time.
Yeah, I think over here we're already into our third or maybe fourth week of Christmas celebration, judging from the surroundings everywhere I go. So no Thanksgiving, you know, for us over here. But how was your Thanksgiving, Greg?
Oh, it was nice. You know, it's good to hang out with family and friends. I don't actually have any family here, but I can hang out with my friend's family, and that's almost the same. It's been a relaxing weekend. As I was telling you, I'm ready to get back to work, but it's always good to have a nice long break before getting geared up for what's going to be a really busy holiday season.
Oh, yeah, I bet it is. Yeah. Now, you didn't take part in any of this crazy Black Friday shopping, did you?
Not so much. Now, I did go to the local comic book shop I did go Friday morning. It's the one Black Friday thing I did. They were having graphic novels and anthologies half off if you go before 12 a.m.
Oh, wow. So all right. Before 12 a.m.?
Before 12 p.m. Sorry, before 12 noon.
I'm picturing everyone lined up, you know. Let's go grab some dinner and then let's line up at the comic shop for the Midnight Madness.
Right. I don't think... The nice thing about going to the comic shop is they were not packed. I just tried to walk downtown yesterday, so that was Saturday. And it was just packed no matter where you went. I didn't even go into a store, but the streets were packed with people. So I couldn't imagine what it would have been like on Friday. But I picked up some cheap comic books. I tried to get the Star Trek ongoing, but I think it's actually not released until this coming Wednesday. So we'll have to wait and talk about that next week. And I also picked up some t-shirts for $1. So it was a good Black Friday.
All right. That sounds good. Yeah. When I lived in the States, I stay home on
Friday,
definitely. Watch football, don't go out anywhere. But, so that comic is going to be the first half of the Galileo 7 story. Is that
exactly
right?
Exactly. And that's why I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I did enjoy what they did with, Where No Man Has Gone Before, but I feel like this is going to be them stepping out and trying something even more different. And I'm really looking forward to seeing if they change the story in issue one or if issue one ends up being a lot like the first one.
Yeah, and then have a twist in the second half, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be curious to see. I'm going to pick it up on my iOS comic reader when it comes out for sure. Well, while we're talking about Thanksgiving, Greg, we were running a poll on Trek FM for Thanksgiving. Little Star Trek-themed poll, and... we asked the question, if Neelix invited you for Thanksgiving, which dish would you most like to try? Now, of course, Neelix being known as the most famous chef on any Star Trek series, thanks to Voyager's replicator rations and needing to cook real food on the ship. Imagine that, eating real food, even if it does taste bad. So it appears, now, did you cast a vote in this poll, Greg? What would you like to have if you... we're going to eat? Would you go for the roast paraka with Prishik gravy or or the sweet Leola root tart?
Oh, well, you know, Chris, that I do have a sweet spot in my heart, so to speak, for Leola root. And I actually, that Leola root stuffing sounds delicious. You know, with the right gravy, I think it could go down real smooth. And it's healthy, you know, healthy. And that's always important.
Oh, it's very healthy. A lot of fiber in Leola root, I think, isn't there? I'm waiting for next summer. Now, as you know, and many of our listeners probably don't, in Japan, a couple of times every year, we get special flavors of Pepsi. And these have included some common things you might think of, like Blue Hawaiian, but they've also included some very odd things like shiso, which is a Japanese strong herb that's related to basil. I'm waiting for the Leola root Pepsi to come out myself.
That's great. That'll go well with my gach Kit Kat.
Oh, gosh. I know. The gach Kit Kat is amazing because unlike all the others where they just kind of put a little bit of extra flavor in the wafer, they actually replace the wafer with live gach.
It's a taste sensation that has to be tasted to be believed, honestly.
Most definitely. And when they released that with the tie-in with Pepsi, with the blood wine Pepsi.
Oh, yes.
You can just completely geek out with your Klingon self, as they say.
Perfect.
So anyway, in the poll, it looks like people really couldn't quite decide what they wanted to have here. I think what they wanted was they wanted to savor Neelix's entire Thanksgiving menu because we had quite a tie with roast paraka with prishik gravy, the Leola root stuffing, and the sweet Leola root tart for dessert all got 20% of the vote. So tie. And then right after that was the Jibellian berry sauce, which goes great with the roast paraka. And also, if the sweet Leola root tart wasn't quite enough dessert for you, if you need an extra serving, the candied chadrik kab with marshmallows also got quite a few votes. So I think it's just a full Voyager Delta Quadrant Thanksgiving meal that everyone wants here.
Sounds perfect.
And we did have two other votes that were cast, which may be a little bit tricky for Neelix to prepare. We had one vote cast for gach, and we had one vote, write-in vote cast for anything Klingon, kapla. So maybe these are people who want to have their Thanksgiving dinner with Captain Claw from Star Trek V.
Yeah, you know, Klingon Thanksgiving meals have a lot more pyrotechnics than American.
Definitely. And also, it's hard to sneak up on Claw if you're going to his ship for Thanksgiving, right? Because he can watch you through the periscope as you're approaching.
Indeed, he can.
All right. Well, what do we have up next in news? Or maybe first, really, in news this week?
Right. Getting into the news portion. A popular topic among everyone talking Star Trek, and certainly on this show, is the new Star Trek film. And this week was, I think, big as far as some real announcements being made. We finally have a release date. And that release date is... Barrel roll. May 17th, 2013. Wow.
All right. So May 17th, 2013. All right. Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about that? Yeah, I know everyone wants the movie out, but at least now we know that it's going to be coming in a little over a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's 18 months away. So
yeah,
it's still a ways. You know, they haven't even started filming. I do understand it's going to take a while. I do like that they're going to go ahead and gun for that summer release, May 17th. That's probably the biggest weekend of the year. That's when Star Wars films are released. That's when Indiana Jones is released. It's a really big weekend. So I'm glad to see they're gunning for it, and that makes me feel like they're not gonna do a let's step back and do Star Trek Insurrection. Let's really go all out and have this be a big action film, which is what, you know, not all the fans are looking for, but certainly that's what I'm wanting out of the next Star Trek film.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that they're not trying to rush it out for 2012 just to satisfy fan demand, because I think a lot of people are disappointed that this date is in 2013 and it wasn't, you know, like, I don't know, November 2012 or, you know, something like that. But I think it does show that they want to make a good movie, that they don't care what the media, what the fans are saying about, oh, you're taking so long. They're just going to take the time that they need to make a good movie. And so I was happy about that. And hopefully it will be a good movie. I agree with you that I do want to see, you know, an action, the kind of excitement that we saw in the first one. But as we've talked about on here many times, I do want to see a really good story too. I don't want to see another simplistic storyline like we had in the first one. So hopefully this also means that they're taking the time with the script to make sure that they've got all that in place.
I mean, I understand taking their time with the script, but you know, one thing I was discussing with you earlier in the week is if they'd continued with the 2-year schedule of Star Trek films, we'd actually be on Star Trek 16 coming out next summer or next December. So I feel like
they're
taking their time to an extent.
Right. And as we were talking about there, we were talking more about if they had continued to make TNG movies, right? And as I told you, we would be heading into the film where B4 explores the concept of comedy with the outrageous Okona and Joe Piscopo on the holodeck with the guidance of Guinan.
A whole film of Joe Piscopo. Can you believe it?
Right. And, you know, as the TNG movies were normally about Picard and Data and everyone else just got to play backup, these later movies would be about Picard and B4.
Yes. Well, you know, Picard gets lonely now that Riker's not there. You know, Riker and Troy left in film 13. And now it's just basically Picard and Data there on the bridge. Wesley,
you mean B4, of course.
Well, you know.
Or are they going to rename him Data later?
They're calling him Data, but everyone knows he's B4. It's confusing. The main thing is, you know, it's just the two of them on the bridge. And, you know, Wesley blinks into existence every once in a while, you know, visiting from his travels with the Traveler. It's a weird vibe on the Enterprise G at that point, really.
Yeah, I bet. So this is kind of like in Remember Me when, so B4 is going to ask Picard, where's the crew? And he's going to say, we've never needed a crew before, right? It's just you and me. We're like the bosom buddies exploring the galaxy.
Star Trek 16.
Oh, gosh. Star Trek 16. The Voyages of the Enterprise G.
Exactly. So, you know, but aside that, you know, I'm looking forward to this new film. It will be, I think it's 12 we're up to now. And they
12.
They haven't quite figured out what they're going to call it. But they are nailing down certain things, such as Benicio Del Toro will indeed be in the film playing... I didn't know. I looked over this a little fast. He's playing Uhura, I believe, is what I read.
Yeah, yeah.
So a big casting change.
You know, you have those moments. I mean, they want to kind of be like with the original series movies, you know, where you have Kirstie Alley playing Savick in Star Trek II, and then in Star Trek III, suddenly it's Robin Curtis.
Right.
Here, you know, you have Zoe Saldana playing Uhura in the first movie. In the second one, it's going to be Benicio Del Toro. I mean, it's kind of an unexpected twist, but, you know, they also said that in the next movie, we can't rely on the first movie.
Exactly.
You know, we have to start over. And so they're starting over.
Well, I mean, it's a lot like Doctor Who. I mean, if you hold on to the old continuity too much, everything just gets bogged down. And, you know, everyone has their favorite Doctor. You know, everyone's going to have their favorite Uhura. You know, you're going to have your Nichelle Nichols fans, your Benicio Del Toro fans. It's going
to
be...
I'm really looking forward to the action figures that come out with this movie. The Benicio Del Toro Uhura action figure is going to be a real collector's item.
I think for sure. Okay, so who is Benicio actually playing?
Okay, so we don't know yet. And actually... you said that he is definitely in the movie. He's actually not 100% definitely in the movie yet, but what we did get is that JJ did confirm that he does indeed want Benicio Del Toro.
Right.
Prior to that, it was kind of a report that JJ was interested. But so JJ says that they are in discussions, in negotiations. He says not even negotiations, really, it's just discussions. But I think this is Hollywood talk for... We just have to figure out how much money we need to pay him, and he's going to be in the movie. So I would expect to see Benicio Del Toro in this movie. A lot of people think Khan. I still don't think it's going to be Khan, personally. What do you think at this point?
Yeah, I don't know what to believe at this point. I'm basically just waiting for next summer to see. I figure they're going to have a big, you know, they'll do a teaser trailer, but that's not really going to explain much of what's going on. They're just going to one by one announce, you know, Benicio Del Toro is playing this guy, and then here's a little bit of the plot, and it's just going to come bit by bit, and we're going to have to piece it together.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't have any clue. I can't imagine them doing Khan, but then if they do, you know, if that's within their prerogative, if that's the direction they want to go in at this point.
Yeah. I think that the first teaser trailer that we get for this movie, what I'm expecting to see is that, you know, after the first mission, there's been some damage to the Enterprise, and we're going to see guys welding the ship back together.
Okay. I thought it was going to be those guys just after the Enterprise is built and they don't have anything to do, and they're just sort of kicking it at the bar with some brewskis.
Yeah, they're kicking it back. They're watching the Bears and Lions.
Lots of lens flares from the televisions.
There's gonna be lens flares all over the bar, and they're gonna be like, "Where the hell are these lens flares coming from? It's really dim in here." They're gonna go, "It's the Blade Runner billboard advertisement over there on the wall."
Well, I was reading about the new Batman movie, and it's gonna take place 8 years after the last movie, and that's
is it gonna have a lot of lens flares in it?
It probably is. I've been playing Mass Effect 2, which is a video game that's chock full of lens flares. But I guess my point is, how far in the future do you think the next Star Trek film is going to take place? Is it going to be pick up where they left off? Is it going to be jump forward 5 years? You know, what are they going to do with that?
That's a good question. I think a lot of that will be dictated by what storyline they pick up. If they're going to play off the original series, it may be that. But just generally speaking, I think they're going to jump ahead at least a couple of years. I don't see them just picking up right where they left off. The whole thing was so convoluted with Kirk getting command. I think it's going to be kind of hard for fans to swallow the idea that they went back to Earth and then they went right back out on a mission.
Right.
And now Kirk is like really, really in charge of the crew, right, and everyone's looking up to Kirk, even though he just got command in the most convoluted way in the history of science fiction. I think you'll see them jump ahead from between 2 and 5 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I guess I won't have a problem with them jumping too far forward, just as long as they don't have Spock and Uhura having broken up with no explanation, and then Spock sacrifices himself so that Kirk can give a speech.
Right, yeah. And then Uhura is dating Scotty now. And we have no idea why.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
So as long as they don't go the "these are the voyages" route with the next film, I won't have too much of a problem with it jumping forward. Let's see. What else do we have about this film? Oh, very good piece of news. Very good piece of news is that Michael Giacchino will be returning to do the music. Obviously, he did the music for the first one. He does pretty much all the Bad Robot stuff at this point. And he's currently working on John Carter of Mars, which is coming out, I believe, next year. Anyway, it's coming up. So I'm glad to see that this will be the next film he's working on.
Yeah, I'm glad he's coming back as well. Of course, it's no surprise that he would be coming back because of his relationship with J.J. Abrams. You know, it's kind of like Jerry Goldsmith with the original movies.
Right.
That kind of a mainstay, I think. I think Giacchino will be a mainstay with the Star Trek films as we move forward. So every time one comes out, you can get your Giacchino on. And we need to get t-shirts with that on.
We
get
really
your
should.
Giacchino on. but I'm glad he's coming back. I mean, the last movie had a beautiful score.
Yeah.
And if you love music, if you love movie music, even if you didn't like that movie for whatever reason, dealing with the characters, I think you have to admit that it really had a beautiful score. So very, very glad to see that he's coming back.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure.
Definitely. And I love the things where they sort of set up themes in the first film and then come back to those themes with a new plot. But just what they're able to do with changing those up, I was thinking back to The Empire Strikes Back and how they developed the themes from the first Star Wars. And the Imperial March wasn't even in the first film. That actually came out of Empire. So it'll be interesting to see the sort of stuff Giacchino does like that, like the stuff John Williams was doing, where he spent years now. I mean, how many years has it been since Star Trek? 4, 5, 10 years? That's been time Giacchino's been able to just have his mind percolating.
Has it been 10 years since the first J.J. movie? Is that what you said?
It feels like it. It feels like it.
Feels that way. Yeah, for sure. Now you said the Imperial March was not in the first Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
I should add that it will be in a future release after George Lucas goes back and adds it in.
There is a fan edit that puts the Imperial March into Star Wars along with a bunch of other changes. It's worth seeing, but it's also worth, you know, the original was good. And
yeah.
And I like that moment in Empire when that comes out, because the movie is so much more about the Empire. Yeah. But that's a digression.
I think that you're going to like, in the next movie, apparently there's going to be a jungle scene. And I think they're going to be chasing through the jungle. And they're, as you said, pick up themes from past Star Trek movies. Picking up the hospital chase theme from Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home, your favorite movie,
and putting
a Giacchino twist on that for the jungle chase.
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. You're going to give me a heart attack here.
All right. Well, what else do we have about this movie? We're just so many little tidbits here. So, okay, 3D. Apparently, it's going to be in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise there, really. I can't imagine a studio not releasing it in 3D
point in time. We keep hearing these stories about, oh, 3D isn't as big as they thought it was going to be. And, you know, adding 3D doesn't make your film an instant hit. Nobody expected 3D to make your film an instant hit. They did expect they would add to the film experience,
yeah.
and it does. I've enjoyed all the 3D films, all the films that were shot in 3D. So I'll be interested to make sure that JJ's actually doing it properly. But if he is, I'm looking forward to this.
Right. Now, you enjoyed all the 3D films. Does this include, what was it, Piranha 3D?
Well, the 3D in Piranha 3D was good. I've not seen all of Piranha 3D, but They did a good job with a 3D in that film. I'll give them credit for it.
All right. I'm waiting for Geely 3D to come out. I was not surprised. One thing that I read in reading about this is that the studio says that 3D has lost some favor in the U.S., but it's still proving popular internationally, and they think that 3D will be helpful in overall sales in overseas markets. And
yeah,
I don't know if I buy into that or not. I personally, being in Japan, I don't think that 3D is going to make this movie any more money than 2D would.
Yeah, it's very possible.
If that's what they think,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, I think they do have something big going for them as far as international sales, in that Benicio del Toro will really help them sell the film in South Talos. But other than that, I think they're just going to have to go on people knowing what Star Trek is, seeing that it's a big American film, and get people in there. I don't know. I mean, do people go out to 3D films in Japan? I didn't get that sense.
They do, but I don't think it's any different than the U.S. You know, of course, it's got to be in 3D in South Talos, because everyone in South Talos is drugged up all the time. And so that 3D really creates a very unique experience for the moviegoer in South Talos.
Definitely looking forward to the Star Trek 4 re-release in 3D, where we have the time travel scene in 3D.
Right. And where the whale probe comes out over the audience and that little ball is hovering right over your head and going, rear, rear.
Oh, heavens. Oh, heavens.
Okay. So last note here on the movie, and then we'll move on. We're going to talk about TNG a little bit in a minute for those of you who don't like the JJ stuff here. Last little bit that came out, confirmation. Mm-hmm. We mentioned that there was a rumor that JJ had been in Hawaii looking for locations. And the Honolulu film commissioner, whose name I will most likely mispronounce, Walea Constantino, has said that he was indeed in talks with Paramount, that they did come and they have been looking at locations. There's no confirmation yet that any kind of deal has been made or a site is selected, but they were scouting locations on three of Hawaii's islands, including Oahu, Kauai, and the Big Island of Hawaii. So perhaps that does lend some credence to the idea of a jungle scene.
Yeah.
So if you want to take that little thread and get on the forums and speculate on what that might mean for the next movie storyline. Yeah. All right.
As long as Kirk stays out of the cave... Remember your failure in the cave. I'm making Empire Strikes Back reference. No, I'm looking forward to the jungle Star Trek movie. So I do hope that happens.
All right. This is where they find the crystal Klingon skull of Kalas, right?
Yes, they do. And that.
All right.
Oh, goodness.
So what do we have next here, Greg?
Well, so the jungle is one place that you might be able to walk on if you win a contest that Bad Robot is putting together right now. Obviously, it's the... I don't know if it's the same in Japan, but right now we're having the Super 8 DVD Blu-ray extravaganza release time, and everyone's doing their press junkets, trying to make this film be a success somewhere. I actually have yet to see Super 8. Did you manage to see it yet?
I haven't seen it yet either. Now. We always watch these things when they come out on DVD.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to to getting the DVD soon. But I just found out about this recently, that there's a website we'll put in the show notes. And if you answer just a few questions, trivia questions about Super 8, you'll be entered into a sweepstakes to win a walk-on role in Star Trek 12, which is quite exciting, I think.
Wow. Okay. So, but that means you have to have seen Super 8 before you can answer the questions, right? One of the questions is, why have you not seen Super 8 yet?
Yeah. No, the question should be like, who was the director of Super 8?
Oh, yeah.
What film is the director of Super 8 filming next? You know, these will be questions I can answer.
Besides Star Trek, which film did J.J. Abrams lend extensive lens flares to? All right. Yeah, they would be very easy questions, right?
So I think that's everything we have to say about the next Star Trek film. So let me pause. Chris, is there anything else you want to say until next week about Star Trek 12?
I think that's all. And I hope that some of our frequent little sidetracks that we tend to go on Ready Room helped to make the JJ news more palatable to those of you who don't like the Abrams verse. So now let's move on, Greg, to something that Star Trek fans do love, perhaps more than the Abrams verse, which is The Next Generation.
Ah, yes. And I've been watching My Next Generation, and I found the scene that I can't wait to see remastered. And that is, of course, the Anbo Jitsu match between William and Kyle Riker. Yoru Shikai Shikbashimashimash.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Yeah, Greg, so I was out with my kids yesterday shopping for mom's birthday. And Greg, you iMessaged me that they really should stay away from Japanese culture.
They really should.
And never have Riker say, Yoroshiku onegaishimasu, or whatever. It's like, I know, you know, every time I watch, this is the Icarus factor from season 2 of TNG. And every time I watch this, I just think that the Japanese stuff in here is so embarrassingly bad.
It's the pinnacle of martial arts, Chris. It's the it's the paragon. It is the evolution of where when jiu-jitsu and karate and I guess, you know, kung fu and tai bo and Pilates, they all combine. And then you blind yourself and you get one of those poles from American Gladiators. You have Anbo Jitsu. The future.
Oh, gosh. You know, and it's not just that. It's like, okay, so we've got to put kanji. We've got to put Chinese characters around. So what do we choose? Well, why don't we get the kanji for star and planet? Because it's Star Trek.
Those make sense.
Like, do you think that if this were actually a real sport in Japan, that they're going to put star, planet, kanji all around the court?
Yeah, and they're not even well drawn. Like they gave some intern a picture of the kanji and said, you know, sort of make it look like that.
Yeah, we know you've never written any kanji in your life, but could you just, you know, kind of do this one for us on the set? It's going to be very prominent in the scene.
You realize, you know, there's that hashtag first world problems, and these are issues that only you and I have with the Next Generation.
That's right. It's like, what's wrong with the Icarus factor? Well, you know, Riker can't speak Japanese, and I know.
I always forget. Anyway, what brings this up is that Star Trek. How do we refer to Mike Okuda? He's sort of a historian. He's a research assistant, but that doesn't
he
quite
is
say it.
The walking vault of all Star Trek creative knowledge.
There we go.
That is Mike Okuda.
Perfect. So he wrote a blog post about the TNG remastering project, which answered some of our questions, not actually as many as I would like. There were a few. I don't know if you looked in the comments section, but a few people asked more pressing questions and Mike kind of said, well, Paramount CBS kind of isn't saying right now.
Well, he obviously, I'm sure he's under some kind of non-disclosure
that
he cannot talk about, you know, all these details. He did clarify a few things for me, though. Now, a few things we already knew. Like he said that, you know, it was all shot on 35mm movie film. I think we all knew that already. And we knew that things were transferred to standard definition video to do visual effects work. And I think we pretty much knew that the finished show only existed as standard definition video, which is something that I know they've got to just be kicking themselves right now. I know it was not, it's probably not that unusual for that time. And when we look at, back at it now, we think, wow, that was crazy for them to do that. But it's one of those things where they just kind of didn't have the foresight to think that down the road, we're going to need this material to be of higher quality.
So basically now they're just having to go back, and it's sort of like it's sort of like they're getting the shots delivered just on the day, you know, shots from the set, and they're going to assemble the show brand new. I guess they don't have to make editing decisions, but they just have to assemble everything from the original film, which we talked about the possibility of an HD remastering project, and I kind of didn't think it was going to happen. Just because of the amount of work, you know, it's so much more work than they did on the original series.
Yeah, it is. It sounds like this is an absolute monster project. Yeah. And I'm amazed that they're going to release all seven seasons during 2012, which I believe is what we've been told, right? I don't know if that's, has that been confirmed 100%?
I haven't I haven't actually seen anything confirmed as far as release dates past the DVD, the Blu-ray.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that Paramount's marketing said that preview DVD is coming in January to be followed by each season during 2012. But I don't know for sure that was said, like, we're definitely doing this.
We'll have to see. It'll be interesting to see if that is the direction. Because I can't imagine that happening. And we already know that there's 13 seconds missing from, is it Way of the Warrior? That they just
Sins of the Father. Yeah.
That, of course, not the DS9 episode.
Well, I will tell you that there are definitely there are definitely 13 TNG seconds missing from the Way of the Warrior.
Oh goodness, no, Sins of the Father, not to be confused with the episode we were just talking about. Now I can't remember its name.
Sins of Kyle Riker.
Sins of Kyle Riker. And Will Riker.
That's Sins of the Father.
As they butcher. No, but I thought the pain stick sequence that's in that episode, I thought that was in Sins of the Father. But I suppose this was an early episode where they were getting into the Klingon rituals.
I think, there is a pain stick sequence. I'm not sure if it's Sins of the Father, though. It's the one where Worf is grumpy.
That's the one I'm talking about that has Kyle Riker. It's these two incredibly disparate. There's Will and Kyle, and then over here is Wesley bugging Worf. And they don't make any effort to connect the plots. But anyway, I was thinking of...
Right. Maybe it is that one then. Yeah. I just know it's just the episode where Worf's grumpy. You know, it's that one.
Anyway, I get my Klingon episodes mixed up, I guess is my point.
Sure. So one thing that Mike Okuda said here, though, that for me kind of clarified a little bit here, is that from what I understood from what he said, they are remastering or rebuilding pretty much all of the visual effects for the Next Generation, which is just a massive project. I can't imagine doing this, but not like the original series where they like really redid things to make them look modern. Here he says that they are going to make every effort to maintain the original creative vision of the designers and the artists on the show, but because things were composited onto standard definition video, they are having to actually recreate most of these visual effects and put them back in HD. So it will look, he says, they're trying to just add detail, make things look crisper, cleaner, more vibrant, but maintain the original vision. So for you, it may not look very much different, unlike the original series where it's like noticeably this is new. But it is being rebuilt.
Right.
So huge time and money investment here.
It's going to be astonishing to see. I'm on one level, I'm actually kind of disappointed that this is as far as they're going, because TNG, especially early on, reused so many of the same shots. I mean, there's a shot of the Enterprise approaching the camera in warp that I think every episode of season two so far that I've seen started with that shot. And then usually the next shot is the one where the Enterprise is coming out of warp, but it's just that same shot cut. And I would really love to see them show a little bit of creative, you know, control and go out there and just make a different Enterprise in warp shot. For goodness sakes, please.
Yeah. Well, maybe they will. I mean, maybe that's one of the things he can't talk about right now.
It's possible.
I think they're probably cautious about upsetting fans. They also probably don't want to change the original creative vision.
Right.
Although in cases like you said, where they like because of limited budget, they had only a few shots. They probably want to try to keep that.
Yeah.
As it is. So. Definitely very much looking forward to seeing this when it's all said and done, though, because there's, like he said in here that things just kind of became murky mm-hmm. because of standard definition television. Right. And that's what I notice. And that's what I would just love to see that detail come out in the next generation.
Yeah.
I
can't wait to see it on a 1080p screen and just see that detail and see the difference and see those terrible kanji strokes. And the detail that you're able to see because of it.
I would like to see them redo some of the planets from the early seasons that were still like very much like we can't really do a good planet yet technologically. Yeah. I'd like to see them put some nice looking planets in personally. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just me. So, some people get really upset about the fact that they're even touching this stuff.
So. Yep. Yeah. So we'll have to just stay tuned and see what they do.
So, Greg, I know you are a big fan of the Scant, but my question, I know that if you lived in the 24th century and you were posted on a Starfleet vessel, that you would opt for a Scant to go with your beard wig, and because they go so well together. You know?
They do. As long as it's a command Scant. I don't want one of those, you know, yellow security Scants.
Yeah, you don't want one of those either, or science Scants either, for that matter. It's got to be command.
Yeah.
Definitely command's the way to go. But my real question for you is that if you were born 100 years earlier in the 23rd century and you were on, say, the Enterprise, original Enterprise with Kirk, would you go for a command division dress? Because Scant's not available. You got to just go full out dress. You know, like Benicio del Toro is going to be doing in the role of Uhura in the next Star Trek movie.
Oh wow! Now I can't do anything but envision Benicio del Toro wearing this uniform. I may need a moment. You know, I love the dress uniforms that sort of are long and then have pants under them, and I love wearing that. I think this might be a little short for me to wear without some sort of pants on as well. But it is a really nice piece. I'm impressed with the artistry on display here, and it's no wonder that it's $300 and that they're limiting it to just a few hundred pieces.
Right. So what we're talking about here, everyone, is the Onovos Command Division dress.
Yes.
you've probably seen these replica uniforms that are done by Onovos. They are expensive, but I think they're expensive if you compare them to, say, buying the standard Halloween costume Star Trek uniform. But the craftsmanship of these things is just absolutely spot on. The detail, the fabrics that they use and all, they're well worth the money. If you really want a good Star Trek uniform, like if you go to a con, a couple of cons every year and you like to dress for the con, these are high quality replicas, very, very high quality replicas here.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's my understanding that Dork Trek is buying some of these so that when they finish with TNG and they move on to the original series, this will be the standard uniform on their ship. All lieutenant commanders will be wearing the skirt, the command division dress. So looking very forward to seeing that.
And also because these are very upscale replica uniforms, instead of going to the little cafes to record sometimes, they're going to be going to, you know, like 5-star restaurants.
Oh, yes.
In these. I cannot wait to see. I hope Dork Trek is going to start doing video podcasts.
Oh, yes.
When they get into these, because I really want to see them wearing their Command Division dresses from Onovos. But they better jump on it quickly, because these are limited to only 150 pieces. And they, you can get them in Captain. You can get them in Lieutenant. As well with the rank braids, and you can even get them braidless if you are an ensign. And I'm sure everyone wants to be an ensign.
You'd think if you're going to buy your own uniform, you're just going to make yourself a captain. You know, who wouldn't just want to be a captain?
They should do like 150 of the Captain Lieutenants and then unlimited Ensign.
There you go. So, that sounds good.
We will put a link to this in the show notes. You can go check it out if you want to. These are available for pre-order right now until January 15th. And I will say about these Anovos uniforms, they do sell out despite the fact that they do run $300 mm-hmm. for Ensign and $350 for Captain. They are sought after pieces and they will sell out. So if you are interested in one, go over there and check them out and get your order in. And because usually I don't think they're commonly available after the pre-order date to get these. But they are just really beautiful. The same double knit fabric as the original series used. They are dyed to match the screen used colors. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And
nice.
If you really want to see one up close, again, your options are contact Dork Trek, tell Dork Trek that you want them to start doing video podcasts when they get to TOS, or go to Star Trek Las Vegas next year where you will see Greg wearing his Anovos Command Division dress uniform.
Indeed you will. All right. Indeed you will.
And lastly, everyone, you may have noticed that we did not preview two tracks from 5-Year Missions Year 2 as we've been doing each week. And that's because 5-Year Mission themselves will be joining us shortly in the feature, and they'll be performing 4 songs from the new album Acoustic. So make sure you stick around for that. Well, we have a real treat for everyone this week. Coming to us from Indianapolis, Indiana, is the Star Trek band 5-Year Mission. Let's introduce everybody real quick. Just say hello. We have Noah Butler.
Hi.
And we have Andy Fark.
Hi.
Hi. And Patrick O'Connor.
Hello.
And we have Chris Spurgeon.
Hiya.
And of course, we have Mike Rittenhouse.
Hi. Of course.
Friend of the show, Mike Rittenhouse.
That's right. Friend of the show, Mike Rittenhouse, who has been on with us before to talk about TOS. So, guys, thanks so much for joining us today from the 5-Year Mission studios there, I see.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. This is the lounge right. area of the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also right. known as Noah's living Gorn. Room.
Is this a Gorn-free zone right here?
Not at all.
Oh, no, there is a Gorn here. Oh no.
It's just a wee Gorn.
It's a good thing that he moves so slowly.
Right.
It's a little paper dog with phone numbers written.
That's fine. That's
for a good time, call the Gorn at...
A footless Gorn that's become a Post-it.
That's right. Go to 5yearmission.net and order your Gorn notepad today.
Ooh, that's a great idea. Write that down.
All right.
Somebody write that down.
Write it down on the back of that.
Somebody journal that.
Well, let's post pictures of that so everybody knows what we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay. Front and back.
All right. Well, it's great to have you guys with us to talk about Year 2. Really excited that your new album is almost ready for release here. We've been listening to Year 1 over and over and over and over, as everyone has, and finally Year 2 is almost here.
Yeah, how long has it been since Year 1 was released? Like... Obviously, between Star Trek and the sequel coming up, there's been like 8 to 10 years where we were talking on news. How long was it between Year 1 and Year 2 for you guys?
A year.
Release date, exactly a year over Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
Weekend.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been, it's like a year and 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, between the two, but since...
Because they moved Starbase like, Indy. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Did you start writing like right away, like immediately start writing the songs for the new album?
Yeah, actually. Yeah.
Some of them I think we had before Year 1 even came out, actually.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of my questions. I was wondering what your process of writing the songs for Year 2 and after you completed Year 1 and it was out, like Greg said, did you just jump straight into Year 2? And were the songs that you had maybe prior to Year 1 that went on Year 2, were they really developed? Had you performed them before, or were they just kind of seeds that you had in your mind and then you developed them afterwards?
We had probably four song, maybe one each from year two that we actually had played several times at shows.
Okay.
Starting when year one came out.
Starting when year one came out.
Okay.
But now, as year two is coming out, we have absolutely no songs for year three.
So. Oh, really?
A
little different, yeah. We're falling behind.
That was my question. Like, do you find yourself, like, watching The Trouble with Tribbles and just you're writing a song by accident even though it's not coming up soon?
Yes.
That does happen to me. Every episode I watch, in my mind, there's an idea for a song.
Right.
Nice.
And we actually just drew the names for year three, like, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we now have our four assigned songs if we don't do any trading. I mean, we know what we have to write now.
Do you draw out of a hat? I mean, is this completely random?
Basically.
It was more like an urn, yeah.
Oh, wow, the five-year mission urn.
Year two was out of a hat. Year three was out of an urn.
Okay.
All right.
It wasn't CERN.
So what do you have planned for year four? What are you going to draw out of there?
Chamber pot.
A human.
human head?
A human skull, yeah.
How about a Klingon skull? Klingon skull.
Yeah, after the battle.
Yeah, Klingon skull.
Wait, let's draw them out of the Gorn head.
Ooh, Gorn head.
We just ordered a Gorn mask, so we'll draw out a Gorn head from now on.
It should be nice and sweaty and stinky by then.
Yeah. Smell like Bandon.
Oh man. So on year two, I'm wondering, what was the easiest song for you to write? Like, the inspiration just hit you, and the song was just there. And then on the flip side, what was the hardest song to match to an episode?
I think we know the hardest one.
I think the hardest one was City on the Edge of Forever.
Yes.
Easily. Okay. That one was, everybody else's was written. We were working the songs to get, working them up in the studio. And City on the Edge of Forever was still not written. So everybody created their own version of City on the Edge of Forever as I was laboring to figure out what I wanted to do with it.
Yeah. And then I think he finally... I mean, he had
finally had enough.
He'd had the idea and given us the idea a long time ago, and I think there's just so much expectation for City on the Edge of Forever that I think when we first heard it, we were like, oh, okay, well, he'll write another one later.
Right.
Yeah, that's his first idea. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a few more down the road, and they'll, you know, I think we were thinking of some big epic kind of journey style song. I wanted like Don't Stop Believing, you know. I wanted some giant, you know, epic thing.
The rest of us had this sort of joke tune that we would play to each other or at practices or sometimes at sound check and shows. It sounded like Journey. We'd be like, City on the Edge of Forever, you know? But it didn't end up being like that at all.
Yeah. I the expectations behind that song is kind of why it took me so long, because I really, you know, I wanted it to be that epic song, and then I took a step back, and what I usually do is I just kind of, you know, find a feel. And to me, that episode is all about the relationship between Kirk and Edith Keeler. So that's how I wrote the song, and it just seemed logical to me. And it was, you know, it was just kind of a lament. And
I took a long break from listening to it. I mean, like, I literally did not listen to it for like 4 months. I maybe listened to it once when he first gave it to us. And then when I listened to it again, I was like, yep, that's it. That's perfect. Well, that's exactly actually, what that needs to be.
There's just this little scene in the episode where Kirk and Edith Keeler are walking by a storefront and you hear a song playing, and I can't think of what it is right now, but that was the inspiration for the song, because it's kind of a waltzy, old-timey kind of song, and that's what I wanted. I heard that, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what it's got to be. It actually, it's like after a commercial break, it opens up, the scene opens on this radio, and it pulls out, and they're walking by, and it's, I can't remember the name of the tune, but you watch it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think I think Tomorrow Is Yesterday might be one of the easiest ones that was written. Because the structure of the episode kind of dictated what the song was going to be like, because I wanted it to end exactly the way it started, you know, and then of course the middle is where the story basically happens, but it pretty much wrote itself because I knew exactly, I know how I wanted to structure it, and so it was really easy to write after that.
Squire of Gothos was really easy because I got this tune in my head, and it was kind of this, I don't know, that flamenco kind of Mexican sounding song, and it just, that one just kind of wrote itself once I had that tune in my head, because he just, it just fit for Tree Lane.
And as easy as Arena
yeah,
seems.
Now have you heard Greg singing that song on the Ready Room before? Greg was singing Squire of Gotho, so I know.
It got stuck in my head like immediately. As soon as I heard it, it was like I was just humming it to myself for the rest of the week.
It was his audition for 5-Year Mission.
Whenever one of you croaks, I'm stepping in.
I think Arena, as simple of a song as that is, I know that went through several drafts before what came out. I think you had two different versions of it written, completely different.
The version on the album is the third song that I wrote for the episode.
Oh, wow.
That was definitely the hardest one.
Yeah, we did have several that we had actual separate songs for that we just rewrote completely.
Who mourns for Adonius. That one had a... It's kind of a mix of the two versions that we had.
Yeah.
And Court Martial was completely different.
Yeah,
completely different song. And Amok Time.
There's a different version of Amok Time.
Someday we may re-release
all those. We have all these acoustic demos of the different versions of the song.
Yeah, what was the original version of Court Martial?
It was more kind of this droning, dark
90s alternative
The problem with it is I didn't... The feel... After watching the episode again, what I really wanted was to get in the mind of this crazy person that was, you know, causing all this, wreaking all this havoc and trying to get Kirk court-martialed. And so in my mind, it seemed like this guy was kind of bonkers. And so that was kind of the, you know, that kind of Western swing style was, I wanted it to be... kind of like his brain, you know, processing what was going on. And it was kind of simple, but at the same time, it had this dark feel. But then, you know, that middle part where it kind of slows down, that's kind of his moment of I don't know, clarity before he just goes nuts at the end. And he kind of has redemption in the episode, but I didn't want to add that in there because...
It
didn't work for the rest of it.
That's not dramatically interesting.
Yeah, that wasn't dramatically interesting.
But the short answer would be less Willie Nelson, more Bob Seger.
Okay.
Bob Seger.
Because that's so nice.
I'd like to go on record as saying I really don't like Bob Seger.
Neither do I.
It's the Silver Bullet Band.
Does anybody here like Bob Seger?
Let's go. How about more Will? More
like Bob
Seger. You're lucky you're wearing that shirt, buddy.
How about more Neil Young?
More Neil Young.
Yeah. maybe someday you'll hear it.
Tell us a little bit more about the other version of Arena as well.
Monster truck commercial.
There was a lot less ass kicking.
it was like a monster truck commercial. It was
and
like 8 minutes long.
That was my draft. I wanted to shorten it down to like a commercial length. Yeah. I was inspired by Patrick's Corbomite song.
Right.
I thought you know Kirk fighting the Gorn was like you know, it was like a wrestling match. You know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to advertise it like a monster truck commercial.
Fight the Gorn!
Yeah. It was like, starting! Federation versus the unknown.
We'll sell you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Blazing heavy metal guitar solos.
It was pretty...
it was pretty epic.
And then the second version was just like a...
Actually, only Chris heard that version.
Chris is the only one who ever heard me do it. I play for you.
Yeah.
And Patrick.
I have it.
I don't remember that.
I never recorded it.
Oh, well, I have a version that sounds just like what you were doing.
what was the second version?
Not the monster truck one.
Anyway, the second one was like a... Like kind of a emo rock song. Kind of... Boring, actually.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
A lot of key.
I remember hearing that and saying no. I think I told you that I was because we decided that the commercial wasn't. We wanted a song, and it wasn't really a song. It was like nine songs squished together.
Literally. Yeah, I mean, Corbomite, you know, even though it was an advertisement, it was also a song.
It was a
right?
jingle. Yeah,
yeah. It was a jingle, exactly.
But Arena originally wasn't. And so when I heard the second version, it was just my reaction, I think, to Mike was kind of like, maybe you should keep working.
Yeah. Well, I just needed somebody to tell me that it wasn't good enough and that I should keep trying.
I think
so,
we've all
to me because he knew I would.
Yeah. I think we've each had one of those moments now where we wrote something and everybody else was like, you should try that again. Yeah, Chris, but it's good to have that. You know?
Chris is definitely the most skeptical and critical. So if you need somebody to tell you to do it again, it'll be him.
I don't know about skeptical, but I will tell you what I
But never tell him. Think. Never tell him to redo one of his songs.
No. Chris is very receptive to criticism.
I think
he takes it very well.
Remember the second version of City on the Edge of Forever? Sounds just like the one now, except for a lot less Edith Keeler's.
Yeah,
there used to be a lot more Edith Keeler's and a lot more City on the Edge of Forever's in City on the Edge of Forever.
We made him take a lot of them out.
Yeah, they were like, well, you need to change this. So I did. Wrote a lot of extra lyrics that I still don't remember.
Well, tell us about the return of the Archines. I love this song too, and I love the fact that you're the line of "I'm up for the red hour, baby."
Well, I think you should mention that we have a guest vocalist on. That.
Yeah, my wife actually did some singing. If you pick up the female vocal, you know, in the background.
Oh, okay.
That's not just Patrick singing.
Ask you about
no,
that
it's not just one of the other guys singing like a girl. That's a real girl.
See, we know girls.
We know girls.
We know some girl. That song, it's a funny little episode. And, I don't know.
That song has developed really nicely. Cause when I first heard it, I thought it was, I liked the song, but it wasn't really, it didn't stand out to me on the album. But once we got it where it is now, I really like it.
It's like, it's all these kind of brainless zombie controlled people, but there's this very like sexually charged bit to it when they go to a festival, because I'm assuming the reason they have festival is so they can reproduce and, you know, and carry on the population. So there's that whole element of it. Yeah. And so kind of taking it a little bit, at least for one little portion of the song, from the point of view as somebody who's kind of maybe secretly enjoying, you know, like, yeah, it's festival, here we are, it's time, I'm going to enjoy this.
It's time.
I'm up for the red hour.
Red hour is on.
It is there.
I'm never going to think of that song the same way again.
Sorry.
Dude, we don't even know what some of these mean.
We all bring our own little personal demons to the song.
I think Noah's songs are probably the most obscure. They're not obscure necessarily, but between the four of us, I think Noah's often have things in there where when he explains it, you're like, oh.
The most detailed.
That's what that was for. Yeah, Noah's was the most detailed.
Meticulous.
And they have words
like the alternative thing.
Hewn.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Like, and Mike and I always talk about how Mike has the least amount of songs that say the title of the episode in them.
Right.
Yeah. Technically, Arena doesn't say it. Andy just says it at the end.
Right.
Yes.
You right. ruined my score.
I'm obviously.
Now, your score is still safe because you didn't say Arena
yourself. Do you
yourself.
Have any?
That's right.
No.
That's right.
Shore Leave is the closest that says the
I
end.
Sure want to leave.
And it's not, yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't technically say it, but
it's impressive, actually.
Sure want to leave.
I sure want to leave, right?
I say that.
And you say the most.
I do too, yeah.
Chris says it'll be right in the chorus, right there for everyone to see every single time.
They don't need to be spoon-fed, Chris.
I think maybe there's just like one that... No, that one goes too.
Squire Gotha. No, you say it now.
I'm sorry, what?
City on the Edge of... No, you say it now.
Yeah.
Court Martial, no, you
the
say
Naked
it now.
Time.
Yep.
Yeah, the Naked Time. That's the only one. Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
There we go.
So can we talk a little bit about one of the tracks later in the album, which is Who Mourns Adonais? And it has a unique little twist to it, which is creatively one of my favorite things that you did on the album. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how this idea came to you and how you developed this idea.
That was one of those things that just happened, wasn't it?
That song, that one, first of all, that was one of the songs that I wrote and rewrote. You know, like, it was the first song I ever brought to the guys where they said, I think you can do better. Try to do that one again. The original was moodier. You know, like the whole song sounded sort of like that beginning section, sort of tempo and everything.
It was more like Bob Dylan-ish.
And so then I went back and I rewrote it as more of a up-tempo pop song, you know, REM-ish kind of pop song. And then since it was the last song in the record, we wanted to do something to make it more epic. And originally we were going to have like a long Hey Jude kind of fade out at the end. And then we kind of changed it to having a long fade in at the beginning instead. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, we were just kind of fooling around at practice, getting ready to play the song.
That's how a lot of our songs start in practice.
Yeah. And
or lack of practice.
I don't know if Andy started playing a drum beat or Chris started playing something, but it was like in the key, and we all knew kind of the notes we were supposed to play, but it was just a totally slow, completely different feel, real laid back, and we just kind of went with it for a while and then decided that was what we needed to do something more with. Have a really long intro instead of a really long outro.
Right.
Well,
originally we were going to write a skit of some kind for the intro to talk over. And instead of that idea, I thought that was maybe a little too much. And so I came up with the idea of, you know, I wanted to incorporate, like in Shore Leave that Mike did on the last one, he incorporated lots of little things from the other songs into that song, and I thought that would be cool. Mm-hmm. So instead, I just kind of took random lyrics from each of the songs and did them with these computer voices, and then we just I included everyone, Mike. And then we kind of, you know, spliced them randomly throughout. And then another part of it was sort of it was like the first opening scene from that episode, the Who Mourns episode, where we kind of took the basic dialogue in that first scene on the Enterprise where the giant hand comes out, and we sort of took that dialogue and ran it through with these computerized voices. And
hard about Captain.
Hard about Captain.
It's funny, the inflection.
I know. So it was kind of a happy accident, really. But as soon as we did it, I said, that's one of the coolest things on the album.
Oh, and also, just no one else will ever know this, really, or be able to pick it up. Mm-hmm. But we have included some musical piece of noise or something from every single song somewhere in the background of that as well.
Like, we've taken
a half second of a guitar solo or a piece of feedback or a vocal and reversed it and squashed it.
Most of them are reversed, stretched out, and have a bunch of reverb.
It was like the revolution number 9 of year 2.
So now I have something to go back and listen for, because I have I didn't pick up on all of those elements.
Yeah,
I think the most obvious is a couple of licks from this side of paradise guitar solo.
It's the guitar solo in this side of paradise,
right?
Chopped up and sprinkled it throughout it.
And I think you can hear Chris and Holly say "old computer."
Yeah,
really,
if you listen,
really slow, like, and stretch out.
Oh,
old
really?
Computer.
And he does his "uh-oh" really slow.
Uh-oh, right? That's
very cool. Well, it's one of my favorite tracks on the entire album, because creatively the whole concept was really brilliant. And when I first heard it, I thought, I actually asked Mike, I said, who's doing all the line readings on here? Because I don't know what computer voices that you found for this, what conversation bots, I think, right?
Yeah.
But they sound so much like you actually brought in a bunch of people to do these. It's really great.
We don't know that many British people.
Oh, great. Well, why don't we have you guys play a few songs for us?
Sure.
So we picked out 4 songs that we would like to hear you guys play acoustic, and we tried to pick out something where everyone gets to sing. Andy, will you be singing on any of these?
Good Lord, no.
He will have a tribble song, though.
I will.
He will be singing.
Oh,
beware!
All right. Nice. Excellent, excellent.
You guys know about the Tribbles EP, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can come back to that.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll come back. We'll okay. come back to the Tribbles. We'll talk, okay. we'll talk about that.
That's a teaser, guys.
All right. Yeah.
So first off, why don't we have you guys play a mock time? This is with Noah with the vocals. Noah, is there any, like a little, we've talked a bit about your inspiration for the different songs leading up to this. Is there any like little bit of trivia or anything that you want to throw out there about this song?
Well, this one, I think I had two versions of it, and I think it was voted to go, obviously, with the second version that I did. But I don't know. I wanted to go with, it's all about Spock, and it's all about the kind of torment that he has to go through that's out of his control. And so that's really what I tried to focus on. And there's no, I think somebody asked me, because there's no conclusion to the song as far as conclusion to the episode goes. Someone said, well, you know, are you going to talk about how, you know, Kirk really didn't die? And I said, no, I'm going to leave it at that moment of complete, like, despair and chaos when he just realized I've killed my captain and my best friend, and hence the title of the episode, you know, Amok Time, Crazy Time, Wild Time, right. You know.
You're screwing with the timeline.
Right. Damn, there. Blood fever.
Yep.
All right, well, why don't you guys play this one for us?
My time.
All right. Good thing you guys can. It's a good thing Mike's in the back, right? Going like
yeah.
this.
Mike dancing?
Are you dancing?
Yeah. Yeah. Great. All right. Thanks, guys.
Leaving it at the tragic moment is the same thing I did with Operation Annihilate.
Yeah, you're right. You did that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Spock's blind from now on.
But it seemed more original when you did it because it's on the album before Amok Time.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Mike. God, you ruined it for me.
You dick.
Okay, so next up, I understand you guys are going to do an actual world premiere. In fact, it's actually an Alpha Quadrant premiere, I believe, of City on the Edge of Forever. And this one is, Chris, you're doing the lead vocals, and Patrick is singing with you as well on this one.
I'm attempting to.
We actually, you won't obviously hear it on right now, but on the album, that we have a violinist that came in to just give it a little atmosphere. And one thing about this, I think my favorite part about this song is a line that I didn't even write, technically, because I lifted it straight from the episode. It was dialogue. But the what's so funny about man reaching for the moon, to me, it's the end of the song, and, you know, Kirk is just, you know, Edith has died, and he kind of, you know, he misses her, he's sad. And when she said that, it was right around the time where he realized how intuitive she was about how things could be. And so it just, in my mind, it feels like something that he would remember, and that would be kind of something he would go over and over in his head. You know, she said this, and it just hit him real hard, so...
And I suggested, when I was having him change lyrics, I suggested that he change those in lyrics to, "Would you believe they put a man on the moon?" But I didn't go for it. I don't know.
Andy, are you goofy?
So, yeah.
You're always
on that note.
Not me, Andy.
But, yeah, we've played a lot. There are just a few songs we've never played anywhere, and this is one of them. Mm-hmm. So here it is.
This is the world premiere of this song. We haven't played this anywhere.
Nope.
Yeah.
World premiere.
Ready?
See what happens.
Okay. One, two, three. One, two, three. Back in time to retrieve our doctor. Now I've found a love it has to end in the city on the edge of forever, removed from time and space. True, however, to be in that city.
Jacob had to become. I could do no more. You'd have understood if I could have told you. City on the edge of forever with you. What's so funny about man reaching for the moon?
Okay, that was a great one. It really captures the spirit of the episode, what that episode's always been for me, which is more about Kirk and Edith Keeler's relationship rather than a drug-crazed McCoy.
Assassins!
Don't think I didn't consider that. Angle.
So Patrick, next we'll have you do one for us where you're doing lead vocals, and that is Tomorrow is Yesterday.
Right. And we've already talked about that one. Pretty much the concept of it. And we don't have the tape effects with us today, but you can imagine them.
We'll imagine it. And then everyone, when the album comes out, you can go back and grab the track and hear the tape effect, which is one of the great touches in this song.
You know, if you haven't seen the episode, if you haven't seen that episode, if you're just a casual listener, the tape effect, because my wife, she was confused. She didn't know what was going on,
right?
And then she watched the episode and then she got it,
right?
So it's it's one of those things where it works really well if you've seen the episode, which you haven't. We have a few songs like that, which I love it. I think it's a great touch, but it's just one of those things where we try to encourage people to watch the show if they haven't seen it before and they like our songs. Well, we try to explain that it makes way more sense if you've seen what's going on first.
And for the record, Mike spent hours on getting
the
tape
effect.
Just right. Many hours.
Yeah. I spent an entire night at work working on it.
Yeah, I think it started out, it was like a minute long at first. And I was like, that's a little too long.
I remember the first time I heard
then
it.
Then I brought it down to like 45
45 seconds straight.
You're like, look, I really trimmed it down. It's so much shorter now.
Yeah, he was rewinding the whole
thing. It's
tape.
A great, great touch. Actually, it's one Greg mentioned to me when he first heard the song was the tape effect.
Oh, okay.
The nice touch of rewinding the episode.
Gotta have those gimmicks.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Yeah. Here we go. Captain John Christopher, U.S. Air Force, serial 4857932, Blue Jay 4. Commence on a radar blip by Sybil UFO. I was dispatched by plane to get a visual. Soaring through the clouds, I was approaching from below. I glimpsed what appeared a spacecraft seconds later. I was aboard the UFO. Uh-oh! men from Alpha Centauri, or Earthmen from the distant future, propelled through time accidentally 200 years back to the late 60s. They cannot risk changing what must be. The slingshot effect could be first time theoretically, but that would mean today would be rest, and tomorrow is yesterday. Matter transporters, alien invaders, instant chicken soup, female computers. I wanted to join the space program, but I will have a son and he will go to Saturn. They cannot risk changing what must be. The slingshot effect could be first time theoretically. Captain John Christopher, U.S. Air Force, serial 4857932, Blue J4, commence on a radar blip by Sybil UFO. I was dispatched by plane to get a visual. Clouds, I was approaching from below. I glimpsed what appeared a spacecraft and it was gone. Yes, I was wrong. The end. Oh well.
Yay!
Nice. That's one of my favorites for sure.
Not mine.
What was that?
I'm just kidding.
He said one of my favorites for sure.
Thank you.
I'm just kidding. And last song we'll have you guys play for us today is this one I was particularly looking forward to hearing in acoustic because it's so driving.
Yeah.
On the album, which is Arena. And this is a song that I'm pretty sure that our friend from Twitter, the Gorn Captain, is going to have a little beef with you, Mike, about this song of yours here, Arena.
Yeah, I'll kick his ass. Don't spit that water up.
Don't spit the water up, for sure. Okay, and we talked about this a bit earlier and how you had the three versions. So why don't we just jump into it here?
Day while investigating Cessna's 3, an alien superpower kidnapped me and put me face to face with a dangerous enemy. How the hell did I get myself into this mess? They say we have to fight to the death, so I'd have ended my life with every breath. If Bones were in my shoes, he'd know what to do. He'd probably hit him with a hyper spray or two and then tell him jokes until he was subdued. Mrs. Fock could take him out with one nerve pinch, or mind meld him into thinking that he's our friend. Either way, with Vulcan logic, he'd know that it would be a cinch. Well, I put both hands together and swing like I'm holding a bat, and then I duck when he swings at me, karate chop him in the back. I don't know how I win, but I'll tell you what I'll do for the greater good of the Federation in the name of the Enterprise crew. I'm gonna kick his ass, kick his ass. 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 If only Mr. Sulu were standing here, he'd samurai slice him without any fear. And where's Charlie Evans when you need someone to disappear? With a sultry look, Uhura would lure him in to a place where he'd have the room to defend. He'd get a beat Davernous Chapel and Janice Rand. Well, I pick up a rock and I throw it at his chest, and it bounces off like styrofoam. He throws a boulder at my head. I'll figure out how to win, 'cause that's all I know how to do. For the greater good of the Federation, in the name of the Enterprise crew, I'm gonna kick his ass, kick his ass. 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 Scotty would challenge him to a duel. With scotch and brandy, with fighting tools. But maybe he was feeling inside of some solid rock. Well, I put my mind to it, and I figured the weapon out. And just in the nick of time, I became the victor in this bout. You knew that I would win, because I always do. I'm James Tiberius Kirk, captain of the Enterprise crew. Kicked his ass, kicked his ass. And I kicked his ass, kicked his ass. No thanks to the Metrons. Kicked his ass, kicked his ass. Girl, you know I kicked his ass, kicked his ass.
Okay, now tell us once again, Mike, if the Gorn captain comes after you, what are you going to do?
I'll kick his ass. I'll put both hands together and swing like I'm holding a bat.
Are you going to duck when he swings at you?
Do a karate chop in the back.
That's right.
No thanks to the Metrons.
Yeah, those Metrons are assholes.
I know, where were they?
If bones were in your shoes, what would you do?
Yeah, you'd probably hit him with a hybrid spray or two. Tell him jokes.
Yeah.
Tell he's subdued.
Oh, all right. Well, that makes sense.
Oh, great. That was just a great one. Great one. So this whole album is a fantastic album. I loved year one. I especially love year two. I love the variety, as we've talked about on the show here the past few weeks as we've been previewing. Just love the variety of the styles on here and how they capture the stories of each episode so well. Now, the premiere of this of year two is coming up for you guys at Starbase Indy on, I think, on December 9th, right?
Yes.
Well, the official release is December 10th. December 9th, we have kind of an acoustic battle. We're actually going up against a Klingon band.
A Klingon bluegrass band.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So that I think we're going to have kind of a soft release then, but our real release is December 10th.
But by the way, the name of the Klingon band is Il Troubadour.
Troubadour.
And they are fantastic.
Yeah, they are awesome.
Everyone listening should go and check them out right now.
Yes.
They're awesome.
Very cool. And obviously, Greg is not in the band. Otherwise, they would be called Il Glamador.
Glamador.
See?
Oh, the Glamour song. I'm looking forward to your you doing the animated series and doing a song about the Glamour from More Tribbles, More Tribbles.
Getting ahead of himself.
That's unofficially, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is gonna be your six, right?
Wow.
How many episodes?
Oh, I forget that far.
22.
22. So 27.
They're shorter though, so we could just do half length.
We'll put it all on it. Yeah, all on one album.
You're challenging me here, and I know. I don't think I can live up to everyone's expectations.
We all want Mike to write short songs. I want to see if he can do it.
My main object on year two is to write songs as long as Mike's songs.
Hey, the arena demo is the shortest demo
ever.
That's true. For this album.
And actually, I only have one song under 4 minutes on this album.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're rubbing off on
If
me.
You would have done Operation Annihilate like I told you, then that would be your short song.
That's right.
That was another version.
One, two, three, four.
Operation Annihilate!
That was it. That was what it was
going to
be.
Oh, love it.
Well, one last thing here, kind of in wrapping up, since we talked so much about year two, I do want to find out. Now, you said as we started the interview that you don't have any songs yet for year three, but you have drawn out of the wasn't a Klingon skull, right? It was an urn.
It was the urn.
Drawn out of the urn this time.
The stone urn.
Yeah.
The stone urn. And are there any tidbits that you can give us a little idea of what we might can expect from year three? Are you planning the great diversity of styles? Or are you planning to do more of a unified style in the next album? What have you had?
You should expect the unexpected.
You know, first of all, we mentioned the Tribble EP. Which basically what we're doing is all of us are writing a Tribble song, including Andy,
the drummer.
Shut up, you dicks.
Okay, Ringo, you can have that one song.
What does he do when I sing out of tune?
So what we're doing is all five of us are writing a song. We're going to make an EP. Hopefully we'll have it out by spring. Yeah, we'll see how that works.
Oh, wow.
But, we're going to leave it up to the fans to decide which of the five goes on the album. So there will be a Tribble song on the album, but there will actually be five different versions of Tribbles. And we drew songs like we normally do. So the four of us each have four songs. Well, I got Tribbles. So that means if Andy's song goes... If Tribbles goes on the album, then I'll only have three songs on the album. Yeah, which was my idea, so I guess I kind of deserve that. But
you got Mirror Mirror.
So what we're going to do is all going to write really crappy Tribble songs so that we get our four on the album. Each one of us.
You're going to throw the game.
It'll probably backfire on us. Whoever writes the crappiest song, everyone will go, oh, that's great.
I know.
Yeah. It'll be
me then.
You know, we could tell them, give them one episode, a highlight of what we picked.
Yeah,
like a little.
Yeah. It's true. We could tell who's going to start the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell them.
I'm going to start the album with
Patrick
with the changeling.
Patrick has the changeling.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be year three. It's titled Year Three, the Unexpected Album. And that'll be coming out. Is that going to be about a year after year two, or do you think you're going to stretch it out a little longer?
We'll see.
We're discussing. Kind of depends on...
Our goal is always to do an album a year, but this year was pretty rough. So
this might be a 6.5 year mission.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes, especially since we have the EP that we're going to do. We'll just see how it happens.
And if there is someone listening out there who wants to give us lots of money and make us rich and famous, then we can all quit our day jobs and we can write these albums a lot faster.
Yeah. This could be a 10-album in 5-year mission.
Yeah, yeah. All it takes is some money.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of money for five people. Year-long salaries.
Or if anybody wants to donate studio time.
Right. Yeah.
Studio time.
For sure. All right. Well, before we leave, why don't you just tell everybody how they can get or where they can get your two?
Everyone's looking at me. So. you can currently order it from our website, which is 5yearmission.net. And very soon it will be up on iTunes and Amazon and all of the MP3 sites. So, you know, you don't have to wait for us to get around to mailing it to you. You could have it right away. And in in a couple of weeks here at Starbase Indie, it will be available
physically.
Yeah, physically for anyone who's coming to Starbase Indie. So that's incentive for people to travel all the way to Indianapolis and go to Starbase Indie.
Okay, and it's selling for a pre-order, it's been $10. Is $10 the price after its release as well?
Currently, yeah. We haven't raised our prices yet. But
as an import, it might be, what?
Like $25.99. Plus, $19.95 shipping.
Right.
$4.
That's only on eBay, though, really.
Well, it was wonderful having you guys with us today. Thanks so much for coming on the show and playing for us.
Thank you.
All set up there.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It was fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Our pleasure. And we're looking forward to everyone having a chance to hear your two.
Well, it was a pleasure having 5-Year Mission back on the show. We had them on one of our first shows. I don't know, episode 3 or 4, I think, back when I was still living in Japan. And they played some songs off.
Yeah, it was one of the very first ones.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they played some songs off year one, and it was fantastic, and it's great to have them back to do year two. I'm sure we'll have them back to do year three as well. That'll be in our second year of doing the show, but I'm sure we'll have them on again.
Yeah, we're going to have them back to do year three with special guest cowbell player, Benicio del Toro.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So I'm actually really excited. I had no idea about this Tribble EP that they're doing, so now I'm really excited to hear that coming up this spring.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I didn't know about that either. Definitely looking forward to that. And also, I really want to encourage them, from the things that we learned in our conversation today, to at some point release an album of B-sides with some of these alternate versions of the various songs.
It's like the Abrams verse of 5-Year Mission.
That's true. All right. Well, I'm sure that some of our listeners will have some comments about some of the things we talked about today, especially the recasting of Uhura in the next movie. And if you don't know what we're talking about and you skipped the movie news at the beginning of the show, you should go back and listen
to that.
I think
we definitely made it worthwhile.
So if you want to drop us a note, that's right. We had to spice up that movie news a little bit because it's been kind of rehashed. But anyway, if you want to leave us a note, just go to our website, trek.fm/contact, where you can send us a text message by email. You can also leave us a voicemail if you like. Just call 646-652-TREK. And you can also talk to us through a variety of channels. There is Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM, Google Plus at hyperchannel/TrekFMG+, and you'll find us on Twitter at username TrekFM. And you'll also find the Glommer King, Greg, on Twitter as
well.
That's
right, that's right. You can find me on Twitter. It's Greg Harbin. That's GREGHAR. B as in boy, IN. And, you know, if you start following me, just send me an at reply and make sure you say, Roshikomashikomashimash, and I'll be sure to follow you back now that I know you. You know the secret passcode.
The secret Japanese passcode. Right. All right. And you'll find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And again, if you follow me too, just send me an at reply and say hello. And if you follow Trek FM, send us an at reply and say hello as well. We love talking to all you guys. If you follow and you're real quiet, well, we might not see you come in. So definitely hit us up there. All right, Greg, what else do we have? Let's encourage everyone to visit the site to play the games we have there, Trek Trivia and so forth. Go to trek.fm/TrekTrivia. Follow username Trek Trivia on Twitter. And I think that wraps up most of the things for this week. If you haven't checked out our new show, Matter Stream, be sure to do that. I forgot to mention that earlier. I interviewed Rod Roddenberry to talk about the Roddenberry Foundation and Trek Nation. If you go to trek.fm/ms, that'll take you right there, and you can find it in iTunes. So, Greg, I'm going to head on out. I got to get over to Cestus 3 because I think Mike needs me to help him kick the Gorn's ass.
All right, Chris. I think it is time to stick a Klingon crystal skull in it, because the ready room is done.